This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 372 of Shutters Inc.
I said, hurry up, my battery's going to run out.
This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and that is Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au. How are you?
And because we've got it, my battery's about to run out. Thanks very much for listening tonight, guys, and we'll see you next week. They say the shorter podcasts are the good ones.
Is that right?
Apparently.
I think there's a limit to how short you can get away with.
Oh, really? So here's a funny thing.
Yeah.
I saved my little bits of stuff, which I wrote out yesterday for the podcast.
Yeah.
And it won't let me open it. It won't let me open the document I saved, it says. So.
Oh.
So I'll just have to make it up as I go along.
Oh, okay.
So all the stuff I had to talk about, which I think was one thing.
Right.
It's not there anymore.
Oh, okay.
I haven't even got that. So how's my week been? It's been all right. It's been 2 weeks, actually.
Oh, it has too.
Seems I was so slack and double booked just last week.
So who are you out seeing?
St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
Ah, I've tried to get into them. Like, they fit in the genre of a lot of the other stuff that I like, but when I gave it a listen, it really didn't grab me, and maybe I need to give it another spin.
Yeah, they're probably my favourite band at the moment.
Yeah, right.
And they were amazing live. And I did a little iPhone, because I was front row, a little iPhone video of them playing, as you do. And then I used the Roll World app, which, you know, it makes those little tiny world photos.
Yep.
I did that with, it does it with video.
Right.
So I had this kind of really, it's got a really spaced out acid trip kind of video from these guys. And I put it up on Instagram, and the guitarist liked it and shared it on his page.
Wow.
Which I thought was rather nice.
Wow.
Rather good.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
right.
So, awesome show. Yeah, rather nice night out. And it took the missus out for a night, which is always the right thing to do.
Exactly. Where did they
play? Was your anniversary yesterday?
It was our 15th wedding anniversary yesterday.
There you go. And they said it wouldn't last.
That's right. They did. Many of them did.
And they still are. I should say that. Someone on Facebook the other day, I can't remember who it was celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
And she put, celebrating my 50th wedding anniversary. And to all those who said we'd never make it, well, guess what? You're all dead now anyway. This must be like her parents and grandparents or whatever, and yeah, 50 years has passed, all those doubters are gone and they're still together.
Oh, nice.
Rather amusement. let's see. Photographically, I've done nothing, I don't think.
Okay.
I'm in a workshop, which is nothing. I'm working with some stuff with Ellen Crumb and some stuff with Tamron at the moment. So we've got I'm starting up doing a talk with Ted's Camera Stores here in Melbourne on the art of photographing people you don't know, doing a talk one evening in June, which for those people in Melbourne, I'll put the details out, and it's going to be a free night at Ted's.
Yeah, nice.
I've just sort of gone under contract with Ellen Crumb as an ambassador to run some workshops. If you buy an Ellen Crumb lighting kit, you get to come along to a free workshop.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of nice for people buying kit who haven't used the stuff much before. And then just got put on the board. Ellen Crumb this year are going to do a national portrait prize.
Right.
Across several categories. And so I'm one of the main judges for that. So,
oh.
So I've had a bit of a busy week.
You liked judging.
I don't.
But you'll do anything for free product.
Well, no, but see, it's kind of as an ambassadorial role, you kind of have to do some stuff that maybe you wouldn't always normally want to do. Yeah. So, yeah, so I'm doing that as much as, it doesn't always. So, I mean, because, well, who am I to judge? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but speaking of photos and judging, did I see some on Facebook? You took some photos?
I did some stuff for the cadet unit for Anzac Day.
No, some like model type stuff with a boat or something, or a plane. It could have been a plane.
Oh, no, that was on Instagram, but that's old stuff.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
That was about.
Have you got your Instagram linked to show to post to Facebook when you link to?
Not always.
I thought I'd seen them on Facebook.
It's possible that one or two of my Instagram posts I did cross-post to Facebook, but I, as a general rule, I don't. But yeah, I it's possible that I did cross-post one or two of my Instagram images to Facebook.
Can I make a little suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
It's just about how to Instagram and stuff like that, how to get noticed and how to get, you know, that sort of stuff. What you should be doing is posting your good photos.
Thank you, mate. Oh, dear.
Oh, we
so I've been going back through my archives and digging out all kinds of random shots from different shoots, different travels, and just, you know, randomly posting all sorts of stuff to my Instagram feed. So it's not all, you know, one style of photography all the way.
Yeah.
You know, there are some people whose Instagram accounts you go and look at and they're a mad food lover and every single image is of food. And it's kind of like, well, that's going to get boring if that's what I'm going to see in your feed every single day.
That's it. But if you're a food lover and yeah, you can see where they get their followers from and stuff.
Oh, yeah, know? For sure.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to vary it up. Few live music, you know, images here and there and some travel stuff and yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have you got many followers yet? Has it been successful?
I think I'm sitting somewhere around about the 120, 130 followers at the moment.
Okay.
After a month or however long I've been on the Instagram.
Yeah, I
being
haven't,
the
I haven't
early looked. Adopter that I am.
You revolutionary, you.
Yeah.
Are you tagging your photos? Are you putting, I haven't noticed.
I'm tagging all the kinds of keywords that I think are applicable to each image.
Okay.
And I where I've used models and I can find those models on Instagram, I'm tagging those people. And I've yet to work out the whole tagging of location thing, because when I go to the location tag option and I type in, you know, a place,
yeah.
It only wants to give me a predefined list of places, and I don't know how
you can type your own up, but see what happens. That
I don't know how
do you mean
to accept them.
Oh, do you mean an actual location tag? Is there an actual little special tag for location? So I've never done it, so
oh, right, yeah. So apparently, you can like put a location tag that is separate to just your regular hashtags.
Oh, yeah, add location. I see it's having a look there now.
But I can't quite work out, yeah, how you know add a location that doesn't already exist in their database. So if anyone knows, so point me in the right direction.
I've had this problem with you know, like Modern Mayhem as an example. We're looking for models. If you're going to look for a model that's outside of the strict 42 locations they allow you, yeah. You can't put it in there. You know, there's no way of just adding that location.
That's
and
right.
The thing is, there's some really obscure places listed.
Yeah,
and
right.
There's really obvious ones not listed.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't know whether it's because you're going to be like a paid-up member or something, you can add your own, or I don't know, whatever it is, but either way, I found
no,
it quite...
No, I'm a paid-up member, and you can't add your own location.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so here you go. Here's all the list of places. Yeah, so yeah, this is a fixed list of places. What
yeah.
if I don't want to put
it's that, really
those
odd.
Places?
If you're a person who travels a lot
yeah.
and goes you know, off the beaten track, then it's quite conceivable you're going to want to put locations that don't exist in their predefined list.
Exactly how I thought it would, you know, GPS, geotag, you would think.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there you go.
Obviously not.
So if anyone knows a way around that or you know, is aware that there is something basic that I'm missing, please let me know.
Yes, but we'd always nice to know some new stuff.
Yeah.
Guess what I'm doing tomorrow?
What?
I'm shooting a wedding.
Your what?
I know.
Jeez. A real one?
Genuine.
Not just a pretend one?
Genuine wedding.
Wow. For someone it's you know?
Yeah, that's a problem. So, yeah. They play that friend card and you know, smile and you know, look at you with you know, those little eyes and you can't hard to say no, you know. So here's the problem. It's a Japanese-themed wedding.
Right. They're Japanese, not a Japanese couple?
They're not a Japanese couple.
Right.
And plus, the stuff going to be going on that's Japanese-themed during the ceremony, but I don't know what's coming.
Okay.
Or they say, we're having a Japanese tea service. I'm going, okay, tea ceremony, I should say.
Right.
But I don't know what that is, so how do you photograph it?
Yeah, right.
How do you know where to be in the right spot at the right time? Plus, it's going to pour it down with the rain. It's been raining all week. Why did I say yes? So, yes, yeah, so I'm shooting two weddings in the next few weeks, which
what?
Is just...
Two of them?
I know. Another friend, you know? It's like, they look at you with those little baleful eyes. Please, Glenn, please. Oh, yeah,
you're my Uncle Glenn with a camera.
pretty much. Yes, right. So that's my joyousness for the weekend is doing that, you know?
Excellent. Well, mate, I have every confidence that you will adapt to the situation as it unfolds before you in no time at all.
But someone does.
I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos on photography.
Have you?
I have. I just feel like, you know, as anyone who listens to this podcast would be well aware, I've hardly touched my camera in the last 12 months outside of doing, you know, the things for the cadet unit. I've barely shot anything at all, and it's really, I don't know, it's starting to bother me that I'm not shooting, you know, and I want to get shooting again. And so when I've had spare moments, there's a guy on YouTube, another guy that I discovered, and although no one in particular pointed me to this guy, I'm going to blame Adam Davidson because him putting me onto the Art of Photography channel, it was through watching one of those videos, you know, how all the other recommended videos pop up on the right-hand side, that I discovered this guy called Joe Edelman, who I'm sure plenty of other, you know, listeners to this podcast have already heard of.
Never heard of him.
Haven't you? He's based in the US, and his videos are beautifully produced, really beautifully produced, and mostly done in his home studio. And just, I've been really...
He's from Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Is he really?
Yeah, I do lots of workshops. I used to do lots of workshops in Allentown.
Yeah, right. Well, he's obviously a very, very experienced photographer. And just shares lots of great information about how to achieve this look and that look and, you know, all the regular kind of stuff. Anyway, so I've been watching a heap of his stuff. So, yeah. I'll put a link to his channel in the show notes for anyone that wants to
have just looking at his website now. It's Joe Edelman, I shoot people.
Yes. It's great, isn't it?
In America, you want to be a little bit circumspect. Just a little circumspect. Yeah. He does some nice work, though. He's got some nice stuff.
He does shoot some very nice stuff.
I was watching a video on wedding photography the other day, kind of find myself how it's done.
Right.
But I was watching this guy called Joe something or other as well from America, funny enough. He's like the photographer who photographs J-Lo's wedding.
Oh, okay.
And stuff.
Wow.
But what I loved about it, and I thought this is, if I was ever going to take up wedding photography seriously, this guy's got it nailed.
Okay.
He's always the second shooter at the weddings.
Oh, nice.
He doesn't do all the boring stuff. He doesn't do all the set shots and all the group shots and all the ceremony shots. He doesn't do any of that.
So he's doing all the candid background
stuff. He's doing all the stuff, all the feel stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you book this guy. And this guy, one of the weddings he shot, they paid $15 million spent on the wedding.
Wow.
So it's not a cheap. He only photographs the high-end celebrity stuff.
Yeah.
But he doesn't take any photos of the main stuff. He just does all the little feel-good stuff around the outside.
Wow.
So I thought, it's a smart way to do it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a smart way to shoot, yeah? But pay someone else. He pays another good shooter to come in and do all the main stuff. All the
bride and groom stuff.
Yeah, and he does all the stuff that he wants to do.
Wow.
I thought, that is a very smart approach.
Yeah, totally.
Very smart approach.
Wow.
Yeah, so we've both been watching videos on photography this week.
Yes.
Crazy us. It's almost like we like interest in photography or something.
That's it. You know what? A couple of months ago, 4 months ago, at the beginning of the year, I said, I'm going to make a concerted effort this year to do more shooting.
Yes. Well, that was a lie, wasn't it?
Well, no, because I spent the first 2 months of the year reaching out to models on the Central Coast, and I could not get one.
Well, someone's put a restraining order on you, have they? Reaching out to models all the time. They're going to complain.
I tell you. Could not get one who would agree to a TFP shoot.
Man.
Not one. So anyway.
So pay. You earn so much money in your day job to come here. Your wife won't mind just spending $600 or $800 on a wedding and a photo shoot with someone.
we're madly trying to save money for Europe at the moment. So,
TFP all the way. Well, it's gonna be other avenues. But do a Model Mayhem casting call.
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
Oh, that's what it was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I reckon I mean, I say 2 months. I probably approached 10, 15 models.
Yeah, but did you approach them or did you put a casting call out?
No, most of the time I sent them a message directly.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah, don't do that.
Why?
Well, how would you feel? Okay, yeah, there's Mr. Bruce Williams, photographer. And people keep emailing you, oh, do you want to come work for me for free? Do you want to come work for me for free? I'll give you photos. How about you put a casting call out saying, this is the shoots, this is the stuff I want to do. These are the dates I want to do it. Looking for interested models.
Okay.
You might get a greater uptake.
Right.
Because they're seeing it and they're not being directly approached. And they're going, you know what? I'm not doing anything that day. I wouldn't mind doing that.
Yeah, right.
You know, you might get that sort of take up. Okay. And you might get people who you might not have thought to approach might step up.
Okay.
So give it a try. But let's do this as a social experiment.
Yeah.
Let's just see what happens now if you do that kind of post.
Okay.
And see what kind of reaction you get. And if you get nothing, well, it's you. They've seen your work.
Yeah.
But I reckon you'd have a lot more success.
Yep.
Just putting up a casting call.
Okay. I shall give that a go.
Let's see what happens. Yeah. Very, very curious to see if I'm bright as I normally am.
Right.
Oh, you know I'm only being serious.
Yeah. All right. So should we get on to some of the stuff that was submitted?
No.
Okay.
We might not even cover any of that today. Who knows? Okay. So this Joe wedding photographer guy from America.
Yeah.
Only shoots in program.
What?
Only shoots at Will's. I would imagine he's one of the highest paid photographers because he's doing these incredibly expensive weddings for these really, really rich people.
Yeah.
And they only feel good if they spend lots of money. So he must be charging a lot.
Yeah.
Only shoots in program. And my initial reaction was exactly yours. Huh? What the? But then.
Yeah.
He didn't explain why, but then he said a few things as he was going along. I think, you know what? That makes sense.
Right.
So as a classic example, one of the things he goes, you know, I'm shooting the bride. She's leaning into the window, got all the light coming in from behind. I'm doing this blown out kind of shot and with the dress and everything else. It's gorgeous. But then dad opens the door, comes in, sees his daughter for the first time in the dress. Is like, oh. And I can't spin around in manual and go bang and shoot that.
Right.
Because I've got it all exposed for this bright, fluffy, airy kind of scene.
Yeah. But if you're shooting an aperture priority or shutter
priority. There's the next thing. So you go, but what if I'm shooting an aperture priority? But what if you're shooting at, say, I don't know.
F4 or F8 or something.
No, 1.4.
Yeah.
Let's say. Really shallow depth of field. Then three people burst in around the corner. Oh, my God! And you spin around and you're at 1.4 and only half of someone's head's in focus.
Yeah, right. Fair enough.
But if you're in program and you pop, it just go, it might choose naturally for the environment F4 or 5.6 because it plays safe with the numbers and goes a little bit more middle of the road.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, they're all in focus.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of shooting in program, using program shift to dial up the aperture you want to use,
yep,
or tweak the shutter aperture bias. Using exposure compensation to fix exposure issues that the camera would have is one option.
Yep.
Now I can see where cameras go wrong pretty well, and I can
guesstimate
exposure compensation pretty well. But what he does, which makes even more sense, is he'll look around the room. He goes, oh, that's the kind of light I'd want if I want to do mid-tone. He'll point his camera at that and just do an exposure lock, then recompose.
Yeah, right.
Or that area there is the kind of tone I want. Lock it on that, recompose.
Yeah, right.
And he sort of locks on locations in the scene for different brightnesses. He goes, that's the kind of brightness I want. Bang, recompose, bang, bang, bang.
That's very much the Ansel Adams approach.
Shooting program.
The idea of the zone system.
Yeah, but this is very intuitive, very fast, very flowing workflow. Or shoot flow is probably a better. And I'm just thinking, you know, in this sort of fast moving, unpredictable type of event photography, weddings, events, et cetera,
yep,
this seems to be. Now, the problem is, and I put on Facebook this yesterday, I said, this could be a whole new world for me, you know, because I hadn't thought this way before.
Yeah. But you don't generally shoot in that type of high pressure environment.
No. So, I mean, I don't normally shoot, but if I'm shooting street photography, I am.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, if I'm shooting whilst I'm traveling, I am, you know. And what I often do when I'm doing travel street photography is I'll shoot in manual, but the shutter speed that I want's locked in, the aperture I want that's locked in, and use auto ISO.
Right.
So if I spin around and change scene brightness.
Yeah.
ISO kicks in to make up the difference. But I'm working at shutter speeds I know is going to freeze most stuff.
Yeah.
And apertures I know is going to give me a best chance of getting the damn thing in focus.
Yep.
And then ISO. But this sort of fast moving, you still got control over, you know, what kind of depth you're looking for, a little bit towards. I would love, and this is the thing that frustrates me the most, is I can program shift aperture, which of course changes shutter speed, but I'd love to be able to program shift just the shutter speed I want.
Right.
Yeah. So I want 250 bang, you know. So that would be, but it doesn't, well, Canon at least doesn't let you do that. You can program shift aperture, which of course changes shutter speed. Yep. The thing is, this is a very intuitive, very much a feel way of shooting rather than a technical way of shooting.
Yeah, right.
And I really feel it's got great merit and just so much applications.
Well, once you describe it the way he did, then yes, you can certainly see the value in it.
Yeah, and so, but it requires a lot from you. And so I put on Facebook, someone said, oh, you know, stick with the program should be the name of the workshop. I said, we should run a workshop on this. My thought was, are you good enough to shoot program?
Yeah, right.
Because most people look down on full auto. And it's not full auto anyway, it's program, programmed auto exposure. But you see, you've got quite a lot of control, but you have to be quite good to be able to shoot this way.
Yeah,
you've got to have a fair amount of visual acuity to what's going on as far as tones in a scene.
Yep.
So you've got to be actually quite a good photographer to be able to shoot and program, which was quite of a mind blower for me.
Yeah, right.
I thought this is quite a completely different way of thinking about stuff.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so that was my little epiphany for the week anyway.
Interesting.
I said, now I'm not sure if I'm game enough to try tomorrow's wedding. Yeah, I might be. I might at some point, because she's not paying.
Yeah. So well, are you going to only carry one body with you tomorrow?
Oh, no. Never carry one body.
Right.
I can't shoot with one body.
Ah.
So my kit tomorrow is it's fairly small, two 35mm size sensor bodies,
yep.
15 to 30, 24 to 70, which I won't use, 70 to 200,
yep.
35, 45, and 90mm macro,
yep.
Of which I'll use the 15 to 30, the 70 to 200, and the 90mm macro.
Right.
Allenchrome Quadra Ranger kit,
yep.
Which I probably won't use.
Right.
Godox flashes,
yep.
Which I probably will use.
Will use.
Will, yeah, yeah, will. And an umbrella, because it's going to rain. No, an umbrella for the flash and a softbox for the Quadra kit.
Yeah.
So it's a fair whack of gear, but I'm contemplating, because it's like on a farm, I'm contemplating taking a 150 to 600.
Oh, okay. Nice. It's
a real compression sort of stuff going on, but I just can't, if I can be, I might take it and leave it in the car. If I see a shot that really stands out using a lens like that,
yep.
I probably I might send
somebody back to get it for you.
I'm taking the trouble and strife as as my assistant.
Yep.
I tried to get her to be the primary shooter and me be the second, but she wouldn't go for it. She wouldn't go for it, which is rather disappointing. So yeah, program shooting. Anyway, there's the thought for let's see if anyone's had any experience or thoughts on that. Would be nice. Yeah, okay, I suppose we could look at a few things that people have talked about this week.
Yeah.
Is there anything staggering interest?
Well, I was going to talk last week about the release of the Sony A9.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that's kind of been and gone, and everyone's yapped on about it.
Well, what was your thoughts, though? I'm curious. I'm sure other people are your thoughts, being a Sony guy.
Yeah, look.
As other people said.
It certainly looks like a fairly impressive camera, as long as you are into the whole E-mount system, which I'm not. I don't know what I will do as a next camera. Right now, I would still really love the A99 Mark II.
Yeah.
Which is...
But you know it's not going to happen.
No, it's not. It's not going to happen. Certainly not if I'm not making some money out of it.
Yeah. Even if it happened as a Camry, it might not happen in your personal situation.
Yeah. So, you know, but yeah, the A9, I mean, 20 frames a second, I really don't know who the hell needs that kind of frame rate, but obviously somebody thought it was a good idea.
32,000 shutter speed. Did I read that somewhere?
Yep. A 32,000th of a second shutter speed. And they reckon, you know, you can do, like, you know, a guy swinging a golf club and not get any bend of the the golf club in the swing because the shutter speed's so damn quick. I couldn't even rattle off all the specs off the top of my head, but I did see an interesting post on Facebook from Christopher Getz, who runs
Hello, Christopher.
Do you know him?
Oh, I don't know him, but I know him.
Know of him? Yep. Which I copied and pasted it, and I hope he's okay with that. If he even is aware that I've quoted him. He said, every time Sony brings out a new camera, their mission statement is the same. Look out, Canon and Nikon, you're going to lose so many pro users because of this new camera. I just pee myself laughing at all the bullshit because give it a month, and like all the other Sony cameras, you just don't hear from them. For me to change over to Sony, a couple of things need to happen. They must ask what the Sony A9 doesn't have that makes real pros not switch. For me, it's so simple. Weather sealing, which I'd be surprised that the A9 didn't have a weather
sealing. As far as I know, it does.
Yeah, I would have thought it would. Damage resistant and battery life. Now, that is the battery life is one of the things with the mirrorless cameras from Sony that is a serious worry.
From what I've read on the A9, though, is that this is more than double the amperage of the A7 battery.
Yes.
And I'm hearing 1,200 shots out of a battery.
Oh, that's not what I read. I read about 480.
1,200.
Right.
So this is actual put to the test.
That's acceptable.
Actual shooting. Yeah, that's huge. That's more than you get out of a Canon.
Right.
Nikon, you wouldn't get 1,200 shots out of one of those.
Yeah, right.
So I think they've solved the battery problem.
I reckon I get about 600 out of my Sony A850.
Which is huge.
Yeah, it is.
Realistically. I mean, I understand if you're shooting sport or you're shooting a wedding. There's a need, every brand is going to tap out somewhere 600 to 800 shots. Yeah, so if you're getting 1,000 shots, it's pretty good. So it's got weather sealing. It's got better battery.
Yeah, the Sony cameras are world renowned for weather damage. God, if the camera even looks at water, you get error code E91 or something.
So I don't know where he gets that from Someone like Colby Brown, landscape photographer of the US, he's photographing his Sony ambassador. He's always shooting with Sony.
Yep,
but he's photographing around waterfalls all the time.
Yeah, right.
And that's a fair area to get a lot of spray and stuff and no problems at all.
Yeah.
So I have heard that. I've heard the same issues about people saying the Sony weatherproofing not that good. But
I've never had an issue with it with my A850. I mean, and I've
Different kettle of fish, though, than over the mirrorless, though. The build quality is completely different.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm not in a position to argue that because I've never held one of the mirrorless cameras, so I don't know what their build quality is like. But anyway, I can't remember the real code from sending them to Sony to get fixed. There were too many. Even dropping the things, they smash into a million tiny pieces, which seems a bit odd, but anyway. I've thrown
I don't think they're built anywhere near as... I mean, compared to a pro body camera, they're pretty flimsy.
Right.
I'll definitely... I mean, a Nikon D4 or a Canon 1DX, I mean, you can hammer nails in with those things.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Bricks. Yep. But I mean, they're four times the size and they're more than twice the price.
Yeah. I've thrown my Canon over 20 meters and it survived, and I've dropped a Nikon off the roof of a car and it just bounced down the road. And for the pros to switch, pros are heavily invested in their gear and workflow. It's not that easy to switch. But I don't know. See, I take issue with that because I hear of guys switching from Canon to Nikon and from Nikon to Canon all the time.
Exactly.
So I don't think it's that big a deal for people to switch. I mean, yes, obviously you're going to go through a little bit of pain and suffering when you first switch because you've got to, remap all the neural pathways, but it's obviously not that big a deal. They need to relearn the old habits crafted so painfully for so many years. Other thing is many people just hate Sony user experience and not much choice in affordable and quality glass. To which I say bollocks, but anyway.
I have no problem saying that because there's no shortage of quality glass.
Yep.
But it's all pretty darn expensive.
Well, if you're going to go with the Sony branded glass, yes.
Yeah, but it's a lot of that stuff's bloody expensive.
Yep.
Whereas if you're a Canon Nikon user, you do have Sigma or Tamron quality lenses as a cheaper alternative.
But you can get those in Sony mount as well.
No, not an E mount.
Ah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, good point.
So there's the issue. Without then having to get things like Metabones adapters and all this other crud around it. So, so I see his point somewhat there, but also disagree somewhat.
They need to build a 600, 400, 300 at 2.8 And just maybe I'll think about the Switch. All the non-Sony glass you can get on the bodies just don't work at 100%. This is ridiculous. This camera, the A9, doesn't have a single cross-type phase detection point.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure what the difference is between these different phase detection points. Yeah. He said, nor a double cross-type, nor a very sensitive one, lower than zero EV. Also, it doesn't have an infrared sensitive metering to distinguish a sports ball from a human head or a player from a volleyball court net. So it's pretty much pointless. Sony creates these ridiculous press events with a single girl running in a straight line, stating that tracking AF is great on all of its cameras. I think it's atrocious to compare it to a Canon 1DX or a Nikon D5 when the A9 can't even compare to an EOS T6i double cross type high precision AF point, nor its IF plus RGB metering. Brilliant marketing from Sony, fooling every internet noob with numbers. I'm just getting angry now. So some of that I agree with, some of it I disagree with.
Well, that's always the case. Yeah. And the thing is also it's a horses for courses thing too, you know?
Sure.
What kind of shoot, what are you shooting? What's your, yeah, if you're never going to shoot a volleyball, that is completely, you know, or that kind of event, that could be completely irrelevant. You might be making a living, a good living, out of landscape photography.
Yeah.
You know, you might be Peter Lick making, you know, $5 million out of a photo.
Yeah.
I don't know. That maybe those issues don't become such a – so it's personal experience. But I think he's right. They've got different focusing systems than Canon and Nikon. I don't know if that's any better or worse.
Yeah.
It's not something I've really get too much hung up on and, you know, how many focus points.
Well, as you say, if you're not shooting sport, a lot of this becomes moot.
Yeah, you know. But I mean, there is an issue with the big lenses. Like, yeah, the big, like Sony's got like a 400mm 2.8 or something.
Right.
But on the A9, because it's an A mount lens, you've got to get an adapter. No, it's an A mount, the 400mm 2.8.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I thought you were saying the camera was an A mount.
No, so the lens is an A mount. You've got to get an adapter to put on the E mount, and then only some of the focusing functions work.
Yeah.
So I mean, that sort of stuff's just stupid for pro end.
Yeah.
And but somebody else, yeah, that complained about the lenses and on the internet, and someone said, yeah, but hang on a second, how many years did it take Canon and Nikon to build up that bank of lenses? Right. Sony's only just kicking off, give them some time.
Yep.
But what I did see one of the major newspaper when they used to exist talking about this, about why a newspaper won't shift over easily.
Oh, okay.
This is the way their cycle tends to work, or this particular newspaper is, one year they'd replace bodies, the next year they'd replace lenses.
Yeah, right.
The next year it'd be bodies, the next year it'd be lenses.
Yeah. You know?
That doesn't work if you're changing brands.
No.
So all of a sudden, the cycle goes completely out of whack.
Yeah.
Even if they were to go buy bodies and lenses that year,
yep.
Well, then, hang on a sec, that means we're relying on these lenses to go 3 years before we get back to a normal cycle, which may not work, you know. So you can see straight away it becomes a logistical issue just because of the way they've always done it.
Yeah.
I thought that was a fairly interesting aspect or viewpoint of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But I don't think feature-wise it seems okay, but I don't understand why if you had, you know, $10,000 of lenses, why – even if the camera was 10% better, if it's going to make that much of a difference, you know?
Mm.
If you're that good a shooter already that you've got this much gear, I don't know. Yeah, will the camera make you that much better a photographer? Is it worth the pain of adjustment of changing over, you know?
Probably not.
No. Trust us, we'd all like to carry smaller cameras, I'm sure.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Here's the thing, though. I'd like to carry smaller cameras, but I'd like to shoot with bigger ones.
Yes. Yeah, I just need a Sherpa. That's what it is.
I like the feel and I like the flexibility of having a decent camera, size camera in my hand.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though, I learned about my own camera.
Right.
So after years of never ever reading a manual, I didn't read a manual this time. I just pressed a button by mistake.
Right.
And I've always known you could do this stuff. I've just never done it.
Yeah.
That you can reconfigure different buttons on your camera to do different things.
Yes, you can.
So I reconfigured a new button that I haven't used for anything else, and it's a really big one for ISO.
Oh, nice.
So I could just hit this big button and spin the dial to change ISO rather than looking for a small thing to press and then turn dial for ISO.
Right.
So it's just, I reckon I've just sped up my ISO changing ability by half a second, which is not a lot, but when you're in a hurry, it's a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
I just have to remember that I've done it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not fall back into, not that there's any such thing, but muscle memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. or habit of how you used to do it.
Yep.
But, yeah. But, yeah, so I reconfigured a button on my camera. I was quite proud of myself.
Excellent.
Yeah. I said, welcome to the 90s, Glenn. You've done well for yourself.
Fantastic. Still on the A9, what I thought was interesting was the truck that got stolen on its way to the NAB show in Las Vegas, the National Association of Broadcasters. And it was a truck full of Sony gear. And it occurred to me the day after it happened that the announcement had been made of the release of the A9. And I thought, ooh, I reckon somebody knew that, you know, there was going to be a bunch of those cameras in that truck. And that's probably why it got targeted.
I could say allegedly. I probably should say allegedly. I saw allegedly the head of Canon USA with a big brown paper bag of cash talking to a guy, a seedy looking guy, with a truck the day before this happened.
Right. Right.
Wouldn't have been their interest to not have this stuff show up at the show.
Are you real? Are serious? You've seen a photo like that?
No.
No. Okay.
Not only is it allegedly, it didn't happen at all. Right. And if Mr. Canon USA is listening, I meant Nikon. No. And if Nikon's listening, I meant food. No, anyway.
Pentax.
It didn't happen. It was let me think of a brand name.
Kodak.
Somebody
with no money to defend themselves.
Pentaflex. It was the head of Pentaflex.
Pentaflex.
Which is a SLRs from like the 1960s. They've gone a long time. There's no one around to sit in.
Dear. Anyway. All right, Adam sent us a bunch of stories. The first one was Lytro's 755 megapixel cinema light field camera is going to kill the green screen. Now, I didn't get as far through the article as to work out why it was going to kill the green screen, but I thought what was absolutely mind-boggling about this was the Lytro cinema camera gathers a truly staggering amount of information on the world around it. The 755 raw megapixel 40K resolution, 300 frame per second camera takes in as much as, wait for it, 400 gigabytes of data per second.
That's not going to work because my memory card's going to run out in less than half a second.
Yeah, memory cards fall in about a tenth of a second. 400 gigabytes per second.
Yeah, of course, then it can change focus, position, depth of field.
I get all that, but, man, what sort of write speeds? Well, obviously, 400 gigabytes a second. But
okay, so Lytro believes that this tech is going to make the merger of CGI images and real-world footage more seamless.
Right.
Therefore, the need for green screen to be less because they'll be able to insert and then change the focal point and all that kind of be able to sort of shift the feel of the world in the image to make the CGI look more realistic, I'm assuming.
Crazy stuff.
Well, we knew this. I mean, Lytro said they were getting out of, I thought they were getting out to do more VR stuff, but obviously the more cinema stuff was their thing.
Yeah.
They got out of the still camera
stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. The next one that Adam sent us was Urban Outfitters offers a year of full-time internship for photographers.
Excellent.
And pays nothing.
Well, zero.
Zero. For a year.
Does it come with medical? Dental?
Hopefully it comes with a damn good feed at the end of the year because you're going to be bloody hungry.
Man.
That's just
terrible.
That is shocking.
Has the interweb exploded? Has it been?
I haven't actually read the comments, but I'm sure there's some good ones in there. But
it's interesting to see if they've been lambasted.
Yeah,
as a company, you go to their Facebook page and see if people are complaining. Yeah, it was one of those things that just doesn't.
There's an interesting. There is one interesting comment in the comments. As I'm looking at it now, it was posted 7 hours ago. Obviously, that's going to change. Once this is posted, this podcast comes out. But Pinchirio says, nursing interns in the Philippines have to pay the hospitals so they can intern there due to the glut of nursing graduates. I'm not saying it's right, just that it happens. Wow. So if you thought photography was bad,
yeah,
nursing's worse.
Man.
Yeah, but anyway. So I'm sure there'll be somebody who will put their hand up and go, yeah, I'll do that. But, yeah.
As I said, it makes it the world of the rich people, though, doesn't it? The rich kid.
Yeah, exactly. Who's David LaChapelle?
LaChapelle. He's a American, he's an American iconoclast.
Okay, which is?
That's what it says in the article. Isn't he a comedian? No, it's David LaChapelle. No, somebody else. He is a photographer.
Okay.
He's best known for his fashion editorial and fashion work, shooting for Interview, Rolling Stone, and Vanity Fair. This is off the top of my head.
he's also shot the likes of Michael Jackson and Madonna. Michael
Jackson, but John, you've got the same head as me. Okay. So he's an American photographer.
Right. Anyway, for all you Victorian listeners, he's headlining the Ballarat International Photo Biennale. Yeah. Is that how you say it?
Biennale.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's I struggled with from. This 2 years ago.
Is it tomato, you know? Yeah. It's the same.
Yeah.
Same problem. So, next one, people shoving their heads together to make animals.
Oh, I really liked those. I thought that was extraordinarily clever.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's a bit of Photoshop that went along with it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But I thought
a little bit of liquify, a little bit of stuff, but it's still very well done.
Yes,
and you can still certainly see how the basic layout is still there. So I was showing my kids all this the other day over Easter.
Yeah,
these pictures, how well they're done. It's pretty cool.
I don't know if there's any more than just the three that are included. I'd certainly be keen to see more if there are more of them in the series. But certainly the three that they've done look fantastic.
Yeah, do it's for the world for all animal care.
Yeah.
In India.
We didn't really set this story up. So for those who aren't following along, these creative photos use optical illusions to promote pet adoption. And essentially what they've got is a male and female adult couple with a baby in one of the shots, but it's just the couple in the other two shots. And what they've used is strong backlighting to create a white shape, and then by very clever placement of the models and the clothing and the negative space, created silhouettes of animals. It's beautifully done. Like I said,
he might only have the three. I'm on his website now, and he's only got the three there too. So,
That's a great campaign.
It's a lot of work
campaign.
Just to get three good images. So. Yeah,
that's three killer images, and that makes a campaign in its own right. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, really nicely done. So thank you for that one, Adam.
Put him in the drawer with the other people you hate but got talent.
Yeah, that's right. The next one was in defense of black and white photography. I'm not sure that black and white photography really needs defending, but...
Why would it need defending?
I don't know.
Because the website's blackandwhitevision.com. I mean, come on. So he sent this through, but did he give it any reason why he sent it through?
No. He just posts these stories on our Facebook page.
Come back to us next week and tell us why we should talk about black and white photography.
I think we're still waiting for a response from him on the last thing we challenged him.
I'm not sure he even listened.
Probably.
Too busy drinking all that
beer.
Yeah.
And the last story from Adam, this is the final design of the Light L16 52 megapixel 16 camera.
Wow.
Now, I don't understand why they're designing this camera with 16 cameras in it.
Because you can then do different focal lengths and all sorts. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's what that says in the story, but...
Because it's so people can just point and go bang and they're not worried and they get everything in one shot and don't have to worry about knowing anything about what they're doing and so on and so forth.
Maybe it's just a case of, sensor and lens technology for smartphone-level devices has become so stupidly cheap that you can do this. But I think this is a perfect time for Glyn to roll out his old adage.
I think my battery's about to run out.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
dear.
Anyway, Tony sent us an interesting story about a photographer. This is Tony White, our resident newsman.
Lovely man, Tony White.
Sorry?
He's a lovely man.
Yes. Our resident blues player. Photographer's stolen cameras blown up by bomb squad.
Oh.
Now, here's what happened, right? The photographer is at a courthouse, puts his camera and gear down in an area that he thought was reserved for the press, and 4 minutes later, gear's all stolen. All stolen, right? And it's like $6,000 worth of gear. A few days later, a box arrives outside the door of the newspaper, and on the outside of the box is written the word explosive. So naturally, the bomb squad is called, takes no chances, detonates it, and it was all of his camera gear. Now, here's the kicker. Of all the press photographers who were covering the story as it unfolded and watching the bomb squad do their thing, the guy whose gear it was who was stolen was one of those photographers. So he got to watch his own $6,000 collection of gear get blown to smithereens by the bomb squad. So it certainly sounds like someone had a bit of a vendetta. And further down in the story, it says that there was a guy, a man in his 20s, was arrested by police shortly before the package was detonated. The newspaper reported that it had received at least one threatening letter and call in the weeks leading up to the bomb scare, including from a man who had taken issue with how he was portrayed in a news story. Sounds like a case of sour grapes, but
No, it sounds like a case of cameras to me. But
And the other one that Tony sent us was a story about facial recognition on Baidu, the Chinese sort of equivalent to Google.
Yeah.
Their facial recognition was able to take an image of a boy, and this was like 27 years after he'd been abducted, and through facial recognition, match him up with an old, early, like obviously when he was much younger, photograph, and was able to reunite him with his family.
Man.
That's awesome.
Kind of creepy that thing's staring at you, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But what a lovely use of technology.
Of spying tech, 1984 spying technology, yeah. But it is. I mean, if you can do that sort of stuff. And,
yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool. David Marland has sent me an article that he has written about backup strategies for traveling. He's sent it to me as a Word document. David, I haven't had a chance to read it. It's been a mongrel of a week for me. I will post it as a download link in the show notes if anyone is interested in having a look at David's thoughts and strategies. And I will get a chance to read it through the coming week and hopefully report on it in the next episode.
And whilst we're on that, my Narbox arrived last week.
Oh, yes. Are you having fun with it?
I've only used it very briefly once.
Right.
And it's the bomb. No, what? I shouldn't say that because people blow it up. It seems to be everything you would want it to be.
Right.
It's not much bigger than a phone.
Yeah.
But it's a weatherproof, shockproof, dustproof computer.
Yeah.
With built-in battery that can power your phone if you actually needed it to as well.
Wow.
It has six hours battery run life on the computer.
Yeah.
SD and micro SD cards.
Yep.
Two USB ports, USB 3, USB 2.
So you could mount a card reader through the USB port?
Absolutely. Yep. And so all I've done very quickly so far is it's got 128 gig internal storage.
Yep.
But I carry my two little Matchbox size 500 gig Lexar SSD drives, which weigh less than a Matchbox.
Yeah. Wow.
So for basically the size of a smaller than one lens, including your phone, you have your phone, the computer.
So maybe the size of an old VHS video cassette?
Not quite as big.
Right. So maybe the size of a Betacam video cassette.
Yeah, so that's sort of, but not as thick, but thicker, but not as big anyway.
Yeah.
But all this way, it fits in the palm of my hand.
Yeah.
Right.
And you've got a terabyte of storage.
A phone, computer, and terabyte of storage.
Wow.
Okay, all in that one little package. And you simply put your SD card in, open up the app. You can then, with a flick of a button, just transfer all the photos from that card onto your. If I've got both of my SSD drives connected, I can flip it to both of them automatically. Mm-hmm. So my backup's done straight away. On the app, I can open up any RAW file and edit the RAW file.
Wow.
Do, 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 and then stream it straight to my whatever site that I want.
Yep.
If you've done video, and this is where I think it comes into its own the best, their video editing on their app is just sensational.
Yeah, right.
You open up a clip, it's just touch, touch, slide, slide to get the little points that you want, and then flip it up to a timeline. Go to the next one, zip, flip, zip, flip. You can do it in seconds flat, add a music track to it, complete, finalize the video, ship it up online, bang, it's sorted out there at full HD.
Nice.
This thing is the bomb.
And what are they worth?
Well, they sell for $399 US.
Yeah, right.
Which, when you think about it, for a computer, which is what it is, and this is where the advantage is, all the processing power is in the box. Yep. Not on your phone, not on, so you don't have to carry a computer. Everything you need is built into this device. It's a quad-core computer built in there.
Yeah.
It does all the processing for you. It works. It can multitask. You can do multiple things at once with it. Yep. This thing's brilliant. And for no space and no size, magnificent.
Wow. That is
amazing. So, I think I'm in love. I mean, I'm really looking forward to getting back out on the road when I'm using it on a daily basis while I was traveling, just to get a feel for how long it takes to transfer stuff.
Yeah, right.
I think it really seems just an amazing piece of kit. So
nice.
So I'll at some point when I've got stuff out of the way with weddings and stuff, I'll go and put it through its paces properly and do a proper review on it. But nice. So far, it looks like the best solution I've seen so far for backup.
Awesome.
Especially if you're carrying your little SSD drives with you. So you've got no spinning devices.
No. Right. So what's your next overseas trip?
Not till August for Africa.
Right.
So I'm supposed to be in Cuba right now.
What happened?
My dad. I had to put the way my dad's health was going, I canned two US trips, Cuba and New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
Just to be here. And of course, and we didn't know how long stuff was going to go on for. And
yeah, right.
Wow. I stand, yeah.
Yeah, right.
The next thing I'm doing, a weekend in Perth in July. That's like my next sort of little sojourn.
Yep.
A weekend away, and that's really it at the moment.
Yeah, right. And when's your psychotic break? September, isn't it?
September, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Awesome. All right, well, I think we're done.
Good stuff, because I've turned the screen off my computer to save battery so I can keep talking.
Right.
And I've got no idea how much battery's left, so it could go any second.
All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
Thank you, and yourself too.
Will do.
Happy anniversary for yesterday.
Thank you, mate.
And may there be as many more as you'd like them to be going forward.
Exactly.
As I said to the bridal party, the bridal couple tomorrow, when I met them last week, I said, just think, you're only going to do this two or three times in your life. Make sure you enjoy the day.
That's right.
Okay, everyone. Awesome. Enjoy.
All right, mate. Catch you later.
Bye.
See ya. All right. So I guess we should hear from David Marland on Shooting the Picture. Take it away, David.
Thanks, Bruce. I've got a confession to make. I'm about halfway through reading the book I'm about to review, but because I found it so fascinating, I just couldn't wait to do a review for you. The book's called Shooting the Picture, and it's a history of press photography in Australia. The focus is on the photographers and how their photographs are used, how there are arm wrestles with the editors and with the subjects. It's based on interviews with over 50 current and former press photographers whose careers span from the 1940s to the present. But this book is not a boring chronology of a year-by-year progress, nor is it simply a book of interviews. Instead, this book explores a number of themes and explores those themes from a photographer's perspective. From the darkroom to the digital, looks at how technological change is changing the role of the photographer, and not just the digital bit, but even changes during darkroom days. Australians, Allies and the Enemy covers the issue of wartime photography, both on the front line and the home front. It raises important and often forgotten issues. For example, the photographer, unlike a journalist, cannot do his job from a hotel. A photographer has to be there, where it's happening, where the action is, the front line. Photographers, just like soldiers, can suffer PTSD as they often see atrocities firsthand. They and their editors are also faced with decisions about quite disturbing and graphic content. Campaign and Leaders looks at how different leaders are or are not depicted in the choices made by editors and photographers. These are just a couple of the fascinating subjects that are in the book. Throughout, there are recurring themes that include how a photograph is composed, especially in order to suggest particular angles for stories, how photographs from time to time, and certainly in the pre-digital age, have been manipulated, the stresses and dangers photographers face. And indeed, the front cover of the book has a photograph of a photographer precariously holding onto a pole on top of the TNG building in Brisbane to get a photo of some event in the street below, many stories below. Yes, this book is mainly words, with photographs chosen to illustrate the points being made. You're bound to be familiar with some of the photographs, but to be honest, I'm really enjoying this view from behind the lens. Shooting the Picture, Press Photography in Australia, is by Faye Anderson and Sally Young. It's published by Magunya Press, and it's a paperback, and it's from $34 to $79 on Booko. Cheers.
Nice, nice. I think OH&S would have a bit of an issue about photographers hanging off the tops of buildings, though. Anyway, awesome. Thank you very much, David. And that will do it for this week. And until we speak with you next, take care.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.